Welcome to the Raising Grace podcast. This is your host, Sheila Chester. I am the mother of three children, and I do not know what I am doing. So I'm contacting regular parents just like you and I to help me find the best ways to help my kids and myself thrive. And maybe in the meantime, I can help you thrive as well. We aren't so different, you and I. With a little grace, we can do this. Welcome to my bonus episode with Simon Ben. Part of representing National Adoption Month includes representing adoptees. This adoptee I met by happen chance over the internet. Simon Ben has dedicated his life's work to helping adoptees thrive. As an adoptee himself, he has found ways to learn that his trauma is not who he is as a person. He's a podcaster across the pond in Yorkshire, England. He interviews all sorts of people who have been affected by adoption. Get ready for a deep dive into a journey of healing. So why don't we start by, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us, tell our listener who you are.
Yeah. So I'm Simon Ben. I was David Anthony Flower for a few weeks. That was the name that my birth mother gave me. I only found that out a few years ago. So I was adopted. I was adopted by my mum and dad when I was 5 weeks old. Back in February 1967.
And your biological mother had you for those first 5 weeks?
I don't think so. No, she had me for a while, then she took me to short-term foster care, like a foster mum, I think, you know, like just a, like one house, not into an orphanage or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And then she had to pick me up from there and take and give me away again.
Oh, my God. That's heartbreaking. I couldn't even imagine what she went through.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what she went through. But I only discovered that like 7-8 years ago. I don't know how many. I can't remember now. But
right. But,
So my mum and dad adopted because they couldn't have kids. So it was infertility. And they also adopted a little sister. So my little sister's 2 years younger than me. We're not close, really. We're not close physically. She lives in Switzerland, and we're not close, kind of, close emotionally, quite different kind of people. Growing up, it wasn't an issue. Adoption wasn't an issue. I do remember.
You were adopted, though.
I knew that I was adopted. Yeah, I knew I was adopted. I was told so young, I don't ever remember knowing. I thought that I was told with a children's book, but I found out the other day that that was only published in 1973, right? So I was adopted in 1967. So was I? I must have been told before I was six, or else I'd remember knowing it.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. So it wasn't an issue growing up. How do I know that? Well, because I've no recollection of feeling different. A lot of adoptees feel very different, right? So they look different. If they feel a bit different, maybe they've got different personalities. Maybe they've got evidence. They look different. So that might be just blonde versus dark hair. Or it might be, you know, black versus white, you know. So I think that, anyway, I'm a white guy adopted by white parents, and they don't look that dissimilar to me. They don't look similar, but I've got similar kind of colouring to my mum, darkish hair, and quite a easy to tan complexion, so not a pale complexion. Yeah.
We call that olive skin.
Yeah.
Yeah, my son's got that.
That's a good way to say it. I remember my sister saying, do you ever wonder about finding your real parents? I said, no, mum and dad are our real parents. So that is my only, one of my only real recollections of this stuff. So, got bullied pretty badly, but nothing to do with adoption. Lots of insecurities about girlfriends. So I'm writing my book at the moment, and And I'm just remembering, you know, my sister bought teen magazines for girls. So these are UK titles. They wouldn't mean nothing in the US. But Jackie and Just 17. So they're girls' issue magazines. And I used to read them because I was hoping for an insight into the opposite sex to make me more successful with girls, right? So, you know, bullying and insecurities about girls, which aren't adoption-related issues. Apart from that, you know, my life was pretty okay. Did okay at school. I had a few meltdowns about friends and stuff like that. But is it adoption? Who knows? The psychologists, I'm sure, would have a field day and say, oh, yeah, that's all totally adoption. But, you know, they're like lawyers, right? They're so clever, they can bend anything to anything.
Yes. I do that with my children. Oh, that's adoption. Wait, is it adoption related? Are you normal? Is it just because you're 9 or is it because you're adopted or what is the deal? So I get that. Like, was it adoption related or was it because I was just a weird kid or was it because I was like this or that's just who I am as a person?
Yeah. And it's a rabbit hole because, well, I'll tell you what, how I see it. If you put it down to adoption, this is what I did, right? So later in life, I put stuff down to adoption. Then you can't fix it because you can't be unadopted, right? So business has caused me far more emotional issues than adoption in my life. And I say that to people and people go, what the hell's that got to do with it? But I've got like an A-B test, right? I've got two things to compare. You know, is this a bigger issue or is that a bigger issue? But I didn't think I was good enough at business. I had a lot of insecurities about the family, running the family business. But with that, I could get better, right? I could become more emotionally intelligent. I could go on strategy courses. I could learn new skills. So I could improve that. But when I thought later on in life that adoption had messed me up, I couldn't be unadopted. Does that make sense? So it's like
a trauma that cannot be undone. So if you're blaming everything on that trauma, it cannot be undone. And that's just who you are. Whereas if you say, this is something I can still work towards and undo, and this insecurity isn't caused by that trauma, or even if it is, I don't know.
Yeah. In adoptee groups, adult adoptee groups, I'm waiting because I'm sure at one point I'll see them. Somebody will put, I got out of bed this morning and I stubbed my big toe on the bedhead and it's because I'm adopted. Has anybody else felt like that? And everybody puts, yes, I have. Yeah, I felt exactly the same. You know, and I've done that. You know, like I'm not criticized. I can see it in them because I've done it myself. Right. I've done that because I read that Primal Wound book. Don't read it. It's not true. It's not scientifically validated. Right. I've seen this thing by some Harvard professor of child psychology. He said that there is no scientific evidence of the primal wound. Oh, so nobody talks about that. Right. This is the manual for adoptees. This is the thing that I read and that took me down. It took me down because
well,
I believe
this is when you were 40, right? Like you were everything was not adoption related until you read that book.
Yeah, that's well, kind of. Yeah. I mean, there was my story kind of jumps around. So I'll go back to what happened when I was 40. So when I was 40, I found out that my teddy bear was from my birth mom. And I hadn't been told that. My mum reckons that she did tell me, actually. So there you are. But I don't remember being told that. And my first reaction, right, this is quite important, right? My first reaction was curiosity. I thought, gentle, oh, that's a bit strange. I wonder why that was. But then when I was talking about it a bit later on, then this volcano of anger towards my birth mother came up, right? So, and I've never felt like, I've never thought about her. Apparently, boys think about birth mothers less than girls, as a rule, right? As a rule. I'd never thought about her, never mind had any anger towards her. But, you know, this thing came out. She didn't love me enough. And there was lots of swearing. I won't swear, but, you know, she didn't love me enough. And the teddy bear was just a consolation prize, you know? Yeah, there's lots of swearing. And the woman I was with said, well, I'm a mum, Simon. I don't think it was kind of quite like that. And the anger, the volcano just stopped erupting because I saw the truth in that, right? But there was a little bit of white smoke. I described this as a little bit of white smoke still coming out of the volcano. And I thought, well, maybe adoption has screwed me up. And so I went and I'd had some business. The business success that I'd craved for years happened around the same time and didn't make me happy. So my antennae were up. Where was I going to find happiness? Where was I going to find happiness? And then I went on some retreats. I went on some courses and I learned a lot of stuff. My life got a lot better. I sold my old business, got out of it, and decided I want to help other people. And a bit later on, I read The Primal Wound. But that took me back down again. But I'd had a, you know, my life had gone from a kind of a 6 out of 10 because of business to more like a 10 out of 10. And then it slipped back down to an 8 out of 10 when I believed The Primal Wound. So I don't know how much that makes sense or whether I'm just giving you my story here. I don't know whether I'm answering the stuff.
Well, I want your story, you know, and as an adoptee, as parents of adoptees, to hear what adoptees are going through, that's so important. Even though you're a little bit later generation, you were in an open adoption, which is what is pushed on us so hard. You have
no, to I wasn't.
Adopt. Well, no, open no, as good. In your parents told you. That's part of okay. adoption. Your parents told you were adopted, and that's it's not a secret in your family.
No, okay.
Right.
That's, yeah. But so my podcast focuses on insights rather than story. So I'm having to adjust my style, right? So I'm going back to story. So Primal Wound, I thought, well, I'm knackered, and then I'm primarily wounded, and that took me down. But then what happened, I was doing a lot of kind of self-development stuff and more modern consciousness, kind of spirituality, not religious stuff, but lots of online courses and reading lots of books. My favorite author at the moment is a guy called Rupert Spira, who is just genius. It's nothing to do with adoption, but it's to do with consciousness. Spira. So I'm into a lot of this stuff, like understanding identity, who we are underneath the trauma that we've been through, right? So you said something about the trauma is who we are. Well, it's not. Right. Trauma is something either with something we've been through or it's the remnants of something in our head or heart that we've been through. But that's not who we are. Right. So my metaphor for this is a fist that represents anger. And I'm white knuckling it, right, with this fist because of the anger that I felt towards my birth mother when I was having these moments. A clenched fist is not the natural kind of position of the hand. Natural kind of position of the hand is open, right? So as I open my fingers, it reveals a perfect glass diamond, and that's who we are. So what I'm doing here is I'm decoupling me and us from the trauma that we've been through, the trauma that we've felt, and the traumatic thoughts in our head, right? So this is the essential thing, right? Is to separate who we are from our trauma. So I study this a lot. I'm pretty much obsessed by it. And it's made my life better. And what I've realized is that who we truly are is unwoundable. So primal wound is the theory. Simon's riposte to that is fundamentally unwoundable, in the fact that, you know, we are these, staying with the diamond metaphor, the diamond, you know, diamonds can't be scratched, right? They can't be cut. I can't cut a diamond. So I can't wound a diamond. And this is kind of who I am. And on another level, give another metaphor, we're spiritual beings having a human experience. The spiritual being that we are isn't a thing. It's our life force. It's our life force. It's our chi. It's our God stuff, right? And that's who we are. The trauma is in the human experience, and the trauma we've been through, the trauma in our head, the trauma in our hearts, even the trauma in our body. And when I grasped that, the moment that I really grasped that is I saw my father-in-law's body, and he died, right? And he wasn't there. His life force had gone. The animating force, his spirit, his internal essence, his spirit, that had gone and left behind a body. So people talk about the body keeping the score. Yes, the body does keep the score, but we're not our body at the level that I'm discussing it. And that's what I've been studying for the last 14, 15 years. But kind of back to the story. About 6-7 years ago, I was having, when I believed that we could be wounded, I went to see a therapist, right? And I had this, I'd paused my search for my birth mother. I'd found out her name, Patricia Joan Flower. I'd found out, and I didn't know that I was going to get I knew I was going to get her name, but I didn't realize that I'd had a previous name. And it was on this piece of paper, this original birth certificate, as you call it, David Anthony Flower. And that was, I think, one of the moments where I started questioning the identity thing, right? Because, you know, we talk about identity and identity cards. If you've got ID, passport, ID card, and we think identity is our name, but it's not. It's kind of deeper than that. We adoptees get very confused about our identity. Very confused because, well, our background, our original name, our trauma, who are we, right? So we kind of, it's a matter of unpeeling the levels. The therapist said to me, "What's happening with your search for your birth mother?" So I told her it paused, and she asked me some question. I'd paused it, and she told me, she asked me another question, and this image popped into my head of my birth mother outside the therapy room, outside the therapist's office. And then the next picture was, it was actually a kind of like a video of me opening the door and seeing her there. And her rejecting me again. I don't remember exactly what happened because it was a real painful, horrible moment. And I kind of went, I froze with fear. I was like white, like I went stone rigid, cold with fear, and then flipped to anger. And my anger was, I'm not going to let this fear of this potential rejection from my birth mother stop me searching. Okay. So I started my search again. I got my adoption file eventually, and this explained a lot more about the story about my birth mother dating this guy for 5 months, telling him that she was pregnant, him not having wanting to have anything to do with that. But there was also this letter, a letter in there from Pat, from my birth mother, to the social worker 4 days after she'd handed me over in the adoption agency in Liverpool. saying that she'd wanted to buy a teddy bear for me. And she wanted to stop at the store on the way to the adoption agency office to get one, right? But the traffic was bad, so she didn't have time. And so her question was, would the social worker ask my mum and dad if they would receive a teddy bear for me from her, from Pat? And as I read this letter, I realized that the teddy bear was totally not a consolation prize. It was a symbol of her love, right? And this letter was just, I remember the smell, because this, you know, like that, this letter had been in, you know, a moldy old storage box for like 48 years, right? So I came up with this metaphor for this a couple of weeks ago, right? Sorry, the tears were streaming down my face as I realized how wrong I'd been. In my 20 seconds of anger towards my birth mother, let's say I was 48. In 28 years on this planet, I had 20 seconds of anger and fear around my birth mother. It's nuts, isn't it? But really, really intense pain, like really horrible, horriblest moments of my life, but 20 seconds. So I'm a swimmer. My dad taught me to swim early. He was a swimmer. And I sometimes swim at this really long pool. It's like 60 yards long. And there's a plastic wall. It's pretty thick plastic, like 4 foot wide, right? 6 foot wide. It comes up from the base of the pool and divides what is in one large pool into two little pools, right? So that they can have more than one competition going on at once. So as I read that letter from Pat, my tears are streaming down my face. Simon, you had it so wrong. How could you be such a numpty? Da 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 da. You know, those kind of thoughts were going through her. But it was there was a bigger feeling than that, right? And it was as if my mum was one of those small pools. My birth mum was one of those small pools, and I was one of the other. I was the other small pool, and the anger that I'd felt for her was the barrier between us, and that collapsed in the moment. As I read the letter, as the tears flowed down, the barrier collapsed, and we became one. Right, and so we were one, and like. She was me and I was her, and we were, it's like a religious experience, I guess. It's like we were love, you know. The love is the absence. Love is, you know, two beings, you know, two people being one, or, you know, a family being one. It's there's no difference. We are one. So that was one of the most healing moments. I had other healing moments as well, but none of them are quite as visceral and or easy to understand or kind of get your head round. When I tell people about the other stuff, it's just like, it's just an idea, a new idea that came into my head and doesn't really make any sense. So that's an
incredible story, Simon. What it shows is that no matter how amazing your childhood was, there's still that piece. And I love your analogy of the trauma being not a part of you. It's part of your story, but it's not who you are. And I love that you are finding the diamond within yourself. But it's a journey. And I feel like as an adoptive parent, how do I help my son on that journey and my daughter on that journey early? And I know you're not a therapist and, you know, but as an adoptee, was there something your adoptive parents could have done to kind of guide you in that direction?
Well, this is obviously the 60s and the 70s and
very Britain's hypothetical is what this is.
Yeah. So if I was to turn it around and say, what advice would I give to your listeners? The adopted parents who are listening.
Yeah.
I would say the clearer you can see your own brilliance, right? your own diamondness, the better you're going to be able to point it out to your kids. So the people say, do the work, right? Do the work, do the work. You, when you came on my podcast, you talked about this stuff. We got pretty depth and it was brilliant. There's another one on one of my podcasts called, it's called Unpacking Our Own Baggage as Adoptive Parents by a lady called Holly Ann Petrie, who's an adoptive mum and also runs an agency, adoption agency. So any relation, our kids do what you do, not what you say.
Correct.
Kids do what we do, not what we say.
Yeah.
Right. What you do largely comes from how you feel, the thoughts you have about yourself, how you see yourself. Right. So another way of saying this, like, if you look at any kind of like emotional intelligence course, right, emotional intelligence book, emotional intelligence starts with us. We have to do the work. Like me and my wife, I'm going to kids, so I can't, but I can't relate this to kids, but I can relate it to me and wife, right? I have to. Do you think it'd be easy for me to change my wife?
Good luck.
Good luck with that. I've got a far better chance of changing me than changing my wife. And you, as adoptive parents, you've got a far better chance. You might not like to hear this, but you've got a far better chance of changing you than you've got of changing your kids. And the number one thing is how you see yourself. So the essence is understanding who we are and seeing our own perfection with our imperfections. Most of us think, and me included, I used to think that understanding was a yes, no thing, right? Understanding was, you know, like on a computer, you know, like an on-off switch on a light or a computer, a one or a zero, a yes or a no, like that, you know, I understand it or I don't, that's it. But you said, I feel it in my soul. So this is, you're at the depths of that understanding. So we can have a glimpse of the truth. We can have a glimpse of the diamond. We're kind of the glimpse of an idea, okay? Or we can see it as kind of a neat concept by some British bloke. I got it from an American guy, actually. I've just kind of adapted it for trauma. So we can have a glimpse, we can see something with our eye, we can get something in our brain, we can have a change of heart, which is a bit deeper, and then we can get it in our soul. So this is, and then we can probably get the extent to which we get it in ourselves is probably infinite, right? But what I'm getting at here is a depth of an understanding. Mm-hmm. So this is when theory becomes practice. This is kind of like an embodied, like, yeah, it's not a bumper sticker, right? It's not a nice idea. It's not like
not a meme, Simon. It's not that's our new thing, right? Is memes. That's the old bumper sticker. It is how we are living in our lives intentionally with our soul selves and not just living surfacely, right? And just getting by. It's diving deep into who we are in the soul of our being.
Yeah. So I want to give you another way of looking at this behavior thing that's quite logical, because we're talking at quite a logical level here. And if you check out that Rupert Spira guy that I mentioned, he can go from logical, like a logical conversation like this, to a really deeply meditative, slowing everything right down and evoking this diamondness. It's not his metaphor, but evoking this essence of who we truly are. So, but on a podcast, that doesn't suit, actually. So I want to, you know, I want to look at this identity thing in a really simple way, that kind of works. So it's a series of concentric circles. You know, like what there's a large circle, mm-hmm. right? And we're looking at identity here, right? And the outer circle is behavior. Okay, so we say things like, "Don't judge the child, judge the behavior." Yeah. So at one level, you know, we say to our kids, "You're a naughty boy," right? "You're a naughty boy," right? So we're equating their behavior with who they are, right? So behavior, but we know that that's really superficial. Okay. So the next circle inside it, the slightly smaller circle, is feelings. So we say, I'm insecure, or I'm traumatized. But then we say, next minute, something nice happens, we get a nice birthday present, or our mind shifts to something else, or the dog wags his tail at us, and suddenly we're happy again. So like, who are we? We're not our feelings, are we? But you know, we identify with our feelings. Next level down is our thoughts. So we say, I think I'm really insecure, but that thought comes and goes. Or, oh, I think I'm really confident, but that thought comes and goes. So we identify with our thoughts, but we're not our behavior. We're not our feelings. We're not our thoughts. The truth is always true. The truth doesn't change. Like, God doesn't change much, does he? She doesn't change. The truth is true. And if I drop this pen, I'm holding the pen up to the Zoom camera, to the camera. If I drop this pen within the Earth's atmosphere, the pen's always going to drop. That's the truth. That's the truth of who we are. And the truth of who we are is that we're not our behavior. One minute, our kids are going completely nuts. Next minute, they're nice as pie. One minute, they're feeling narky and gnarly, and they're tired and grumpy and won't go to bed. Right. The next minute, they're sound asleep and they're feeling fine. Right? Next, but who I truly am is the entity that is having the thoughts, feeling the feelings, and doing the behavior. That's the awareness, the consciousness, the spiritual being. But we all get really confused about identity because we associate identity with, well, I've said it, you know, with our name. Well, that's just a label, right? That's why I said, you know, like when I found out I was David Anthony Flower, that's what got me kind of hooked into identity, because I thought, oh, I've had two names. If I've had two names, I can't actually be either, because the truth never changes, right? So we're not our name, we're not our behavior, we're not our feelings, we're not our thoughts. We're that diamond underneath all that. But we get confused by all this stuff. So what do you make of all that? Did that make sense?
You know, it's really deep stuff, Simon, but I'm following you. I'm following you. It's really deep stuff. I'm following you. I've been doing personal work, exactly what you're talking about, for the last 6 years. Finding who my diamond is inside of me. And that's not something that we talk about. We talk about my union with God and where do I sit in the universal, you know, and it's really deep stuff. But the thing of it is that I'm doing the work. I know that if I'm not showing my feelings and I'm not being authentic with my children, they're not going to know how to do that. And I know that if I'm not finding the issues inside of myself that muddle who I really am, the truth of who I am, I'm not doing them any favors either. If I'm doing the work, they can see that, okay, the work is important. Mom's doing the work. You know, like my husband and I, we went to the marriage counseling the other day and told the kids, hey, we're going to marriage counseling. We argue too much. He's irritating me. So, you know, we're doing the work. And I think just showing up and telling your kids. And this is for all parents. It's not just for adoptive parents. It's, you know, we're doing the work to find out who we are in this realm of being. We are not our thoughts. Because honestly, like when you talk about meditating too, like the thoughts that go through your mind, and I have such anxiety and depression. So I got some pretty crazy thoughts going through my mind. And it's taken a long time for me to learn that that's not who I am. Those thoughts are not who I am. I'm not too much. I'm not overwhelming. I'm not, or I am good enough. Whereas I'm always telling myself, I'm not good enough. I'm not good enough. And it's more than just telling your kids, you're good enough. You're good enough. You're good enough. You have to show them how you do the work to be and feel and understand who you are deeply and internally. And, you know, you go really deep and sometimes it's hard to understand, but I'm following you. Am I on the right track?
I came up with this the other day, right? Diamonds are buried deep. So that's where we go deep. A friend of mine who I don't see so much, he said, the trouble with you, Simon, is you're a bit too deep. And I didn't, in the moment, I was kind of so gobsmacked. I didn't come up with the retort, but I came back with a great one the following morning. I wish I'd had it at the time. Like, well, would you prefer I was more shallow? Do you know what I mean? We talk about me.
Most people would. Most people prefer to be more shallow because it's easy, but who are you really?
Yeah, I don't think it's because I think that's just because we learn shallowness. You know, it's just we'll want to fit in, and most people are not going deep, right? So they remain surface level. And they stick with their memes, and you know, And I've been studying this for like 14 years. So I'm going to go back to some of the stuff that I learned really early, because it's a progression, right? But if what I've said is like incomprehensible, well, people probably just stop listening, right? But if you've just thought, well, maybe Simon will give me something that's a bit of a nugget or a bit of a hack or a bit of a simple thing, right? 13 years ago, I went on a 5-day retreat where we looked at essentially the fact that we are not the voice in our head. So we are not the voice in our head, and we spent 5 days on that, right? So if people want to check that out, my mentor, coach, therapist, whatever you want to call it, Elizabeth Ivory has written a book called It's Not Your Fault. It's called It's Not Your Fault. You can get it on Amazon. And it is a book written by the woman that did that led that 5-day retreat with her husband. They're married they're married now, but they work together as well. So I did 5 days on that. We are not the voice in the head. We're not and we're not the story. You know, we are not our story. Story is not who we are. We're not. When I gave you the concentric circles, I could have said we're not our story as well. I could have included that as another circle. We're not our name. We're not our job role, right? You weren't always a mum. I wasn't always a podcaster. We're not our role in life. Okay. So we're going deep. But if you can just tune in to that fact that you are not the voice in your head. If you can just pick up, have an explore of that. Because that voice in your head, what if that voice in your head could become an opinion that you no longer value? What if instead of trying to fight the voice in your head, which only makes it scream louder, what if you could just ignore it? Most self-development stuff is all about trying to silence the voice in your head. I tried that. It didn't work. It didn't work for me. What if the voice in your head can become an opinion that you no longer value? Because it's not you, right? You're the one that's hearing it. it's got your voice. It sounds like your voice because you think in your voice. You think like you sound, right? But it's not you. It is merely merely. It's that just like that's like saying it's merely dynamite, right?
Right.
It is the sum total of all the stuff that you, the diamond, has picked up as you've rolled through life. So the teacher that said that you'd never amount to much because you were daydreaming, the kid in the playground that said you were crap and ugly because you had braces, the homicidal narcissistic boss that said that you were a complete waste of time, the grumpy dad that was so involved in himself that he didn't want to help you with the homework and said, "What's the point of going to home?" Whatever. Like that voice in your head is what the psychologists call conditioning, and it's the crap that you've picked up that veils your diamond. And that voice of your head, it isn't you. It isn't you. And if you want to explore that, that's an easy way to start it. And that's kind of what I explored first. All this other stuff, the deeper stuff that I've going on. So I talked about like that. And the other thing that I wanted to bring up based on something that you said is that feelings are an inside job. How does that work? We pick up this idea that the outside world determines how we feel. Have you ever been happy in the rain? Have you ever been cheesed off in the sunshine? Like you've got a fair complexion, right? So you're thinking, I burn sometimes, right? Like, so I'm supposed to be having this fantastic holiday and then I'm cheesed off because I've burned. You know, I've been unhappy in the sunshine. I wish I was at home in the rain. So there is no such thing as miserable weather. That's just a societal, cultural thing.
It's just all in here.
Yeah, feelings are an inside job. Mm-hmm. Richard, who works with Liz, who wrote the book I told you about, he says that he points at his heart and he says, this is a treasure chest. This chest here that we've got is a treasure chest. It contains every great feeling that we've ever wanted. We're just, as adults, right? We're just waiting for an excuse to let it out. Do kids have that problem?
No, my kids were outside in 14 degree weather in the snow this morning, having the time of their lives.
I love that much, yeah. Yeah, talk to them about the miserable weather concept.
So maybe our kids should be teaching us about feelings.
Maybe they should.
Well, Simon, I'm going to put all of your notes, everything that you mentioned, I'm just going to put those websites up on our show notes, and then I'm going to definitely put your podcast on our show notes as well, because people that like to go deep need to listen to Simon. And you talk to a lot of different types of people. So I think that's...
Yeah. Adoptive parents, adoptees, and adoption professionals.
Yeah.
But I try and steer away from people that don't have lived experience, or not steer away from. The vast majority of people that come on my show are talking from practical lived experience as part of adoption. They're not talking to me from theory. They are an adopted parent, or they are an adoptee. I'll just leave you with one thing in terms of if I'm sounding Pollyanna-ish, right? Knowing all this stuff doesn't mean I don't have bad days. I forget that the weather sometimes can't. I sometimes forget that the weather can't cause my mood. Right? I forget that. I get cheesed off in traffic jams. I get impatient in the swimming pool when there's some slow people in front of me and I just want to get past. It's all too choppy. So I don't want to. You know, some people think, well, knowing this stuff doesn't. Means that you never have a negative thought or negative feeling ever again. Totally not true.
Yeah. It doesn't cure all of our ailments. It just keeps us aware.
didn't it? Yeah. Well, they're like rumble strips that point us back to who we are, right?
That's exactly. Rumble strips. I like that. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much, Simon. Have a great dinner.
Yeah. And lots of thanks for listening. If you've got this far, right?
I've gotten this far, right? If they got this far, they went deep, man.
They went deep, yeah. But that's where the good stuff is.
Yeah,
that's where
the good stuff is.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Keep smiling. Thanks a lot. Cheers.
All right. Thank you, Simon.
Bye.
I hope you enjoyed my interview with Simon as much as I did. I don't often get to discuss the deep stuff, and I'm so glad I had the opportunity to do so. I want to thank Simon for interviewing with me. You can find his podcast at thrivingadoptees.com. And a little nugget, about a year ago, I interviewed with him as an adoptive parent. You can find that on his website. Thank you so much for listening to Raising Grace Podcast. This is your host, Sheila Chester. And as a reminder, I am not a parenting expert, and neither are my guests. Don't forget to give yourself and others just a little bit of grace today.